science.
It's time for Research Filter, and Dr. Will Grant is my research filter. Like, that's his job. He's going to filter the research for me, make it make sense for you. He's a lecturer and researcher at the Australian National Centre for Public Awareness of Science at the ANU. Will, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Patricia.
Well, let's see how good you are, because I need you to explain to me this. There's potentially some big news for breast cancer detection this week. Talk us through this research.
Okay. So this is big news, big splash, but let's be very careful from the word go. There might not be anything there. So the headlines have been fluttering around the world at the moment. And look, I'm contributing to that right now by talking about it right now to you. Researchers in the UK have suggested that they can use a blood test and looking at some antigens in the blood that are basically associated with a immune response to tumours, to be able to then detect breast cancer, potentially up to 5 years before any other symptoms show. Now, that all sounds really awesome. Everyone would love to be able to, well, detect any sort of cancer. And you can imagine, you know, just some sort of blood check. You know, if we all gave blood once a month or something like that, and we could just get screened for all variety of cancers, that, of course, is a holy grail. We could operate and treat far earlier. But the numbers here are just tiny, and they're not really, it's the glimmer of potential here. It's not anything that we can really bank on for quite some time. So, you know, the number of people that they had 90 people in the study with breast cancer and 90 people who didn't have breast cancer, which makes it a fairly tiny study when you think about it. A lot of other studies where you start to show effect sizes, you know, might have hundreds and hundreds, thousands of people or much more. But then when it came down to it, it only was able to detect breast cancer amongst the people who had it 37% of the time, which, you know, that's not enough really to act on. In reverse, it could show that 79% of the control group didn't have breast cancer. That still meant there's 21% of people who are worried here that they, you know, it's not showing anything for them. So the numbers are very tiny, and this is a lot of cancer researchers are saying, well, slow down. And I think this is an interesting moment for us to think about how fast this sort of news passes around and think we'd love these things, but that doesn't mean we should always just jump on them straight away.
Okay, but there is potential for future testing though, isn't there? So possibly one to keep our eyes on, right?
Look, absolutely. Look, the concept of there being an immune response to tumours is definitely true, and potentially it could be something that we might be able to find if we could find these antigens in the blood and then be able to detect them. However, one of the problems, I think, is there's going to be a lot of different, there's a lot of different breast cancers, actually the DNA for different breast cancers, there's quite a few different strands. And so the response to them can be quite different. So I think we are quite some time off this. Doesn't mean it's not a holy grail that medical researchers would love to have, you would love to have, I would love to have, we'd all love to have it. But yeah, we're a lot further off than this might be suggesting.
Now, let's move to another story. Our next one is pretty spectacular, actually. It's all about a fungus that turns house flies into zombies and shoots other flies with fungus cannonballs. And I can't believe I'm actually saying this. Is this actually like fake news? What's this all about?
Well, if it's fake news, then congratulations to whatever, I don't know, intern in Russia or Macedonia or wherever made this up, because that's awesome. It's a great concept for fake news. So this is just one of these bizarre bits of science that, well, I think we can love. So this is a fungus, and the way that it propagates is by working with common house flies. I guess working with is probably a little bit generous to the fungus. It takes the house flies over. So basically it will infect a house fly, and we'll come to how it infects them in a little bit, and gets inside their skin, gets inside their brain, and then starts controlling their behavior. There's a couple of fungus and different bacteria that will do this to insects, actually control them and make them do certain things that they otherwise wouldn't. So they call them zombie fungus here. It'll take over the fly, make the fly climb to the top of a flower or a stem or something like that, and then put its wings out to spread itself out and then ooze out this drool that will stick it in place. Then the fly will die. That's not very nice. But the next thing that it does is then it grows the fungus all over the fly and makes these tiny little spines, I guess, coming out of the back of the fly. And when another fly comes close, perhaps to, see if there's any fly that it might mate with or if there's anything interesting going on, maybe there's a smell in the fungus, it will fire tiny little cannonballs at a fairly rapid rate into the next fly and then propagate around, making more zombie flies all over the place.
Is it dangerous for humans at all?
Is it dangerous for humans? I would be very surprised if it would, because our biology is fairly different from flies. I think this fungus would not, I don't know if it would get into our skin. I don't know if it would take over our brains. Oh, well, this study hasn't actually, the thing the researchers were mainly looking at was how fast the little cannonballs of fungus were fired out of the dead fly. But it doesn't appear to be dangerous to humans right now.
Okay, it's good to know. Let's move on to this one that I think is really, really interesting. Our final study for the week took a good look at our trusting nature as humans, right? What did it look at?
So this is, we all know, as we move more and more into the online world, that we all put our faith into the internet, into computers, into machines spitting back answers. Now, we all know the problems of fake news. We talked about them just before. This is not necessarily it's about fake news, but it's how much we might trust the machines that are underpinning our world at the moment. And it turns out that, we're actually fairly trusting. So what these researchers did is they made some calculators deliberately give wrong answers. So they hacked into the circuitry of these calculators. Instead of giving the proper answer, 10 plus 10 equals 20, they would inflate the numbers. So in the first study, they just inflated them by a little bit, by 15%. So instead of 10 plus 10 gives you 20, it'd be 10 plus 10 gives you 22 and a half. Is that right? I don't know. 23. There you go. That's much better. Yeah. It turns out that, yes, people with higher numeracy abilities, better at maths, would detect those changes and would become skeptical and then do things like rechecking, overriding them, or clarifying. But it's not something that people did very much or at all. So on the simple sorts of sums, people would do it. But on complicated sums, people would just inflate it. And in fact, at the 15%, people would mostly just take it as it were. If they changed the number to by 120%, so 10 plus 10 equals, I shouldn't have done that example. I don't want to do that math straight out there. But if 10 plus 10 gives you 42 or something like that, then people start thinking, hang on, this isn't looking good. So, okay, our skepticism is raised there, but it seems we do trust them more than we should.
Okay. So should we ditch calculators briefly?
No, just double check. Double check everything. Keep your own maths brain engaged.
Keep your own maths brain engaged. Look, there's nothing like having children for keeping your maths game up. Dr. Will Grant there, researcher and senior lecturer at the ANU. 6 times 6. See you later. It's news time. 7.